Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us on Empower Radio. This is David Franklin Farkas, and my guest this evening is going to be Susan Seidman, who's a registered nurse, but so much more. So we'll be talking to Susan in just a few minutes. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. As you know from my last few weeks of metaphysical musings, I had surgery recently and I've been recovering. And there are lessons everywhere when you're going through this. And one of the things that came to mind was, how far are you willing to go to take the next step that you know you need to take? Are you willing to do something that's scary? One of the things I always say is the difference between people who become master practitioners of almost anything, but certainly of shamanic stuff, and most other people is when you have an experience that is frightening, really strange, most people will go, "That was cool," but they really mean I'm terrified. And they go home and drink beer and watch reality TV or whatever it is they do to space out, watch sports. And then they have a really cool story to tell, but they never do it again because it just completely scared them. The people that wind up doing totally amazing stuff, when the scary things happen, they go, "Oh, this is something I don't know about. I have to find out more." And they go looking for someone who can teach them what they need to know. At some point when you've done that enough, you realize that everything in life is exactly like that. So using my surgery as the metaphor, the question became for me, is it worth doing something that's scary and painful for a while in the hopes that all the things that have been holding me back physically for decades will be taken care of? I just have to work through this difficult time, and then I will have something completely different. I don't know exactly what, but based on what other people who have had this surgery have had, I won't have the pain that I had before, and I'll have movement that I haven't been able to do most of my life. And that's true of jobs. That's true of relationships. That's true of learning almost any skill. It's true of everything in life. Are you willing to take the next step, usually into the darkness, whatever the darkness looks and feels like, into what is scary for you, so that you will transform in that darkness into something bigger, better, more amazing than you can presently imagine, because you don't know what's in the darkness and you don't know what's on the other side of it? And the truth is, the darkness isn't really dark, and the scary stuff you find out pretty quickly is something that you can handle. You just didn't know you could handle it because you hadn't done it. That's one of the key lessons in all of this kind of work, and maybe in all of life. When it's not even when the going gets tough, when you come up against something that you don't understand, when you come up against something that is confusing, when you come up against emotions that are uncomfortable, when whatever it is that makes the situation scary, uncomfortable, in some way, something you want to either turn your back on or run away from, can you turn towards it? Can you get help from other people, from your own grounding and meditation? Can you work out a way to face it and walk into it, knowing that you'll be safe, knowing that you'll be given the resources that you need, knowing that the outcome is going to be something that you know is right because you've been attracted into it? It didn't happen by accident. You were given this opportunity because there was a reason. You attracted it to you. And the more you do it, the more it becomes a habit, like everything else in life. Instead of having the habit of, oh, this is scary, I'm running away. You get the habit of, oh, this is interesting. Can I do this by myself? Do I need to find a teacher? What do I need here? I need to know about this. And that is a real turning point, not just in metaphysics or shamanic work, but in absolutely everything in life. So that's our metaphysical musing for this evening. And now I'd like to introduce our guest, Susan Seidman, who has one of the most fascinating backgrounds that I've heard in a long time. I always like people that have such a broad background and such a varied background. You just sit there shaking your head and wondering how they got there, and that's part of what we'll talk about tonight. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you very much, David.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, and I'm always intrigued with the types of questions and all of the experiences that you share on your show.
Thank you. Thank you. But you've got some experiences to share as well. May I tell the audience some of your credentials, just to give them an idea of the breadth of your experience?
Certainly.
Okay. So Susan, on my introduction of her for the show, is a registered nurse. But she's a holistic registered nurse and working with anthroposophical medicine, which I hope she will explain to people because most people have never heard of it, and it's really wonderful work. She also does an incredibly broad range of other holistic work using various methodologies. But by day, hiding in the corporate world, she's a quality assurance engineer testing software and trying to blow it up so that it won't blow up on the customers. So she's got this incredible range from medical knowledge through a whole range of spiritual and holistic modalities to being a geek girl. And I always find people who can have that wide range of experience and contain all of it and use all of it just fascinating. How'd I do?
I think you did pretty well. I'm surprised. We all live in these parallel universes and concurrent universes where so much happens that it seems like disparate pieces of a puzzle, but in fact they all fit in and make a picture of your life. It's just that you don't necessarily know it when you're sucked into it at the moment.
Exactly. So I remember you saying that you knew that you were a healer at a very, very young age.
I did. Somewhere around the time I was 4 years old, it was very clear to me that I wanted to do something in the realm of healing or in the medical world. And by the time I was seven, I knew for certain that my path would be very different from anyone else. But I had no clue, obviously, at the time where it would take me or what it would lead to. But there was always this impulse for healing. And I always felt that I could just look at someone or put my hand on someone and it should be healed. And when that didn't happen, I think I had temper tantrums. But it was something that I realized at a very, very young age.
So how did that expand and develop? So did you go to nursing school as a first step in that? I know that was something that happened in my life. I started studying first aid and became an EMT and other physical things before I got into anything in the healing realm. But how did it play out for you?
It played out in a very strange way. It didn't go as if one would think in a life where you have things planned out and it's very linear. That didn't happen at all. What happened, I think, that contributed to the start of my skills was that in high school I majored in fine arts. And that taught us how to observe in a really different way, to see the world in a different way. And I began to be able to see inside the soul of the people whose portraits I was drawing or painting. And I began as a part of that process to be able to know their thoughts before they finished them. And that was a little peculiar because I'd be the one laughing before a joke was finished being told because I knew what the person was going to say. So it was an interesting time, but that was really, I think, the beginning of my training in the healing realm. After I got out of college was when I really started to seek a path of healing. What is it that I need to learn? And there were so many areas I was interested in, but there was so little that was available at the time. So here we have another parallel universe going on. I was working as a primary special ed teacher, teaching very severely handicapped children between the ages of 3 and 6. And during that time, I was studying meditation, the Kabbalah, energy healing, theosophy, Rosicrucianism, and anthroposophy. So that seems to not quite fit, but what actually happened as I was working with these beautiful children, I was able then to really see their inner soul gestures and connect that with their spiritual nature. There were a lot of Down syndrome children in my class, and they have such a strong connection to the Buddha that you could just feel the love expand into the world. So here I had these two different worlds happening, but they intermingled so well at that point in my life. As I was doing all these different studies, and part of it was the study of anthroposophy, as you had mentioned earlier, which was developed by Rudolf Steiner, who was a seer, an educator, and scientist who lived in the late 1800s and died around 1923. He developed this form of working called anthroposophy, which is the study of the wisdom of man. And there was actually an institute, which is now a full-fledged university, where you could study how to become a Waldorf teacher. The very first schools that were founded, that he helped to create and found, were known as Waldorf schools. That's because the head of the Waldorf Astoria Cigarette Company in Stuttgart, Germany, went to Rudolf Steiner to ask him to help in forming a school because he felt that the reawakening of human values had to begin with children. So during this time, I heard of the Waldorf Institute. I went there to see what was going on, and lo and behold, before I knew what had happened, I had had an interview, and I was accepted. But I still hesitated to go because my love was early childhood education, and they didn't have that program at the time. I waited, and within 6 months, they developed the very first early childhood program in the country, Waldorf Early Childhood Education. I took that course, and during that time, I began studying all aspects of healing, anthroposophical medicine, therapies, as they relate to children, as they relate to adults. I began studying homeopathy, herbology. So there was a wide range of interests that were happening there, and people came together at the Institute from all over the world. So one was constantly exposed to all kinds of stimulating and healing aspects in life.
So you were really there at the beginning of all of that work, the Waldorf schools in particular. And thanks for clarifying where the Waldorf name came from, because that always seems strange to me.
It's often interchanged with Steiner schools. So you'll hear Rudolf Steiner schools or the Waldorf schools.
Right.
But it's all the same thing. So it was during that time that I was teaching young children and practicing all of these specific exercises for thinking, feeling, and willing that things began to shift and worlds began to open up. I was able to tell at least a week in advance before a child would be getting sick. But I learned that I had to keep my mouth shut and not mention it to the parents because they were incredulous and they didn't believe it. So I just watched and I observed. And then I became aware that I was also one step ahead of most of the medical practitioners as far as knowing exactly what my own body needed and implementing it. So that was another aspect of healing and the beginning of this inner sense or intuition of beginning to sense illness, disease, imbalances in the body. I was studying Touch for Health at that time, which is also known as applied kinesiology, nutrition testing. There were so many things that were available. It was really wonderful. So I was totally immersed in that world.
And at this point, you're a medical intuitive. You can really psychically at a distance evaluate what's going on with somebody very accurately. I know because you've done it on me. So you can, I would call it in my work, a scan. You can scan somebody and have a whole lot of information about what's going on medically inside their body.
Yes, that's exactly right. But one of the things that I have to say is it's very difficult for me to say to someone, I'm a healer, or I'm a medical intuitive, or I'm an animal communicator, anything like that, because they're just labels and skills for abilities all of us have, but some of us have just worked at really developing them more than others. So for me, an aspect of healing, and I think the most powerful aspect of healing, is really working on one's inner life as well, living a life of loving kindness, compassion, and understanding, and really taking steps forward in your own moral and ethical development. Because when you're working with someone, whether you're scanning them, whether you're sending healing energy, it's really a connection with the divine energy, the divine life force in the universe. And as you always say, everything is energy, everything is connected. And because of that, I really feel that we just transmit this information from one person to the other. We all know it. We all have it in some form or another. And what I've learned to do over the years, as you often say, it takes a lot of work. I've worked really hard at it. But I also have never taken it for granted. I find it very, very holy work. I find that the more I study, the more I realize how special, how holy and blessed this energy is and the experience is when you're sending healing, giving healing, working with another person. There's so much that happens that you don't even know, and it happens on so many levels, and it comes back to you in very interesting ways. So I honor that all the time.
Absolutely. It's totally amazing work. And I went through a very similar process of, especially because the way that I was trained, there wasn't a name for the work because I was working with individual shamanic practitioners. And, you know, I can't call it Greg's work. I can't call it, you know, the Cherokee guy's work. So there wasn't a name for it. And I didn't know what to tell people I do. And people are either skeptical or afraid. So frequently you get very strange responses. So I totally understand that. But at some point, there was a transition for me where I said, well, I've got to figure out how to say this because this is the work I'm supposed to do. And if I don't tell people what I do, they're not going to know that I do it and I won't be able to do the work. So it was kind of, okay, I got to figure it out. I absolutely get what you're saying. It's a turning point in every practitioner's work to try and figure out how do I say this and feel respectful and in integrity and without putting a lot of ego on it, especially in a field where there is a lot of ego and there are a lot of people saying it's me, it's mine, this is how I do it, it's my process, it's you know, the naming of it and taking ownership of it kind of thing.
I think that's an important step. It often happens as the first step when you step into the healing realm. You have to begin to make things your own. And it's not a question of distorting any of the methods or the techniques or the lessons that you've been taught, but really expanding on them, mm-hmm. making them more, putting them together into this whole picture rather than just pieces of the puzzle, so that when you work with the energy, you bring everything in it that you're capable of bringing and whatever is appropriate to the situation. And I've seen you do that a lot. So that says to me that the person really has integrated all of their knowledge and really lives in a place of authenticity and integrity. But for me also, going to nursing school was something that I hadn't planned in my life, not really. And that happened as a result of a health crisis that I went through myself. I had gotten really sick with an autoimmune illness. And during that time, I was so sick, I wasn't able to move. So what can you do? Just like what you went through, there's plenty of time to think about things, to question, what is it that's really going on? Are there any unfulfilled impulses in my life that I came in with, things that I really want to do that I haven't done? And that's when the experiences came back to me that I had when I was 4 years old. And I went, all right, it has to do with the medical realm. And although I don't relate to traditional medical studies, maybe I really need to take up nursing. And the more I thought about that and took that in, the more I realized that was the next step. And I did that while I was working full-time as a quality assurance software engineer and contractor, jumping from job to job to job. Fortunately, I landed one long-term contract where my manager was very intrigued with my being in nursing school, and he would help me study. So it was wonderful. While I was doing some automation, I was being quizzed on all the drugs I needed to know for the week.
That's very cool. Isn't it great when you find allies like that?
It was one of the best experiences. And to this day, he's a very good friend of mine. And I don't know that I necessarily would have made it through my boards without the work and the quizzing and the help that he gave me. So it was really wonderful. It was a very good balance to be grounded in the corporate world, doing all kinds of automation and coding or testing, whatever I was doing at the time, and then to go back to my life in the medical field and sit down with a medical book that was the size of the Empire State Building and try to learn all of this. But I was very happy to learn it. I was glad when it was all over. I was very happy not to have to be in the traditional medical field. But it helped so much overall to really learn all of the aspects of the human body, to learn a lot of the tests. Everything has really stood me in good stead.
Susan, we're up against the break, so I want you to hold that thought. And I also want to hear more about anthroposophical medicine and acutonics, which you do, and it's something I was not familiar with before. But we have to go to our break, and we'll be back with Susan Seidman, and we'll give the call-in number if there's anybody lurking out there that wants to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. So stay with us. We'll be right back here on Empower Radio.
So coming to the stage is a really funny guy. Y'all know him. Put your hands together. Give it up for George Wilborn.
Folks, why won't we go to the doctor? My uncle called, speech all slurred, complaining his arm's numb. He calls everybody under the sun. Aunt Peyton, his old army buddy George. He even called my daughter Tierra, because, you know, she's got a year of nursing. Everyone thinks he needs to go to the doctor, including me. So he said, well, will you take me? I'm like, I'm on the road. He goes, I'll wait. Stroke's no joke. If you or someone you love have symptoms of stroke, don't call family. Don't dial a friend. Don't wait. It may be too late. Dial 911. Time loss is brain loss. Seriously, dial 911.
Learn all the symptoms of a stroke at strokesnojoke.org. That's strokesnojoke.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the...
I present to you three of the fiercest subjects ever assembled in the Cage of Doom. First, the brain-wrenching behemoth Algebra 2, weighing in at a mind-boggling 800 pounds. Foreign languages! The multilingual international sensation capable of tossing you clear across the Atlantic. And finally, biology. More ferocious than formaldehyde, she'll dissect you one chromosome at a time. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Me too.
I'm in.
Sign me up.
Take on the tough classes now. You need them to prepare for college. Find out which classes you need at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation
later,
for Education,
much later,
and the
we
Ad
heard
Council.
Something. We didn't breathe for listening. Then footsteps on the back porch, creeping, then more confident. After all, nobody was home. A hand closed on the knob on the screen door to the kitchen and found it latched. We heard a little sawing sound as a file began to slice through the screen wire. Grandma reached down for something in her sewing basket. Through the darkness, I managed to notice Grandma's rocker was rocking and she wasn't in it. She was standing over me. "Keep just behind me," she whispered. I followed her across the room into the kitchen. Now we were by the door, and I heard the scuffle of heavy feet in there on the crinkly linoleum. Grandma turned back to me. Under my nose, she struck a wooden match with her thumbnail. She touched the match to something in her other hand. It sizzled. Then she leaned down and rolled it into the invisible kitchen. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book A Long Way from Chicago by Richard Peck. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
We're back with Susan Seidman, whose breadth of both personal knowledge and experience is pretty amazing. And we were talking, I was asking you to talk a little bit about the things that most people have probably never heard of, including anthroposophical medicine and acutonics.
Well, those two subjects alone could take weeks to discuss. But
give us the cliff notes.
Let's try a little bit. Okay, I'll talk a little bit about anthroposophical medicine, because if you can say it, man, you're good to go. So most of the people I know just look at me like I have three heads if that comes out of my mouth. But really what it is, in the early 1900s, there were doctors who were aware that medicine was going more and more towards the cellular, I can't even say that, cellular level through the invention of the microscope and those types of approaches. So a number of doctors went to Rudolf Steiner and said, is there a way of bringing the spirit back into medicine, of looking at the whole human being? And Rudolf Steiner worked with and trained doctors all over the world. It's similar to homeopathy, but it's a step beyond. Homeopathy looks at a plant and sees the different parts that work on the human being in certain ways. Anthroposophy turns the plant upside down and sees the roots as the nervous system of the human being, the stem as the metabolic system of the human being, and the flowers and the leaves as the thinking of the human being and the feeling of the human being. So when remedies are prepared, they're prepared with that knowledge in mind, and they're also combined with the metals that go with the planet. So there's a whole astrological aspect to the medicine as well. Then the doctors are board certified. They've gone through medical school, and then they've gone through special training to be anthroposophical doctors, or for me, I went through training to become an anthroposophical nurse, and I was actually on the board of the Anthroposophical Nurses Association of America for many years. We provided training in a lot of these therapies, a lot of compresses, rhythmical types of massage, and the medicines to licensed massage therapists, other nurses. And I also went to a number of anthroposophical medical conferences, too, so I began to have a broad understanding of what it can do. But it looks at the human being as someone comprised of body, soul, and spirit, and those interrelationships. And then the medicines themselves are designed to strengthen areas that are weakened, that aren't interacting well, or that aren't balanced well.
Before we continue, I want to give that call-in phone number so all of our friends that are lurking can join the conversation. That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474 if you want to join the conversation or ask some questions. Please give us a call. So, Susan, you know, before I even knew that you were doing anthroposophical medicine, I mentioned to you that I had visited an anthroposophical physician when I dislocated my shoulder some 30 or 35 years ago. And I thought that was an interesting coincidence, but I've had an experience of that kind of medicine. And it was very powerful. When I went in to see the surgeon for my check in 2 weeks, he stood there dumbfounded, wondering how I had done so well in such a short period of time.
It can be pretty remarkable. And again, it's tailored very specifically for the individual. There's no one protocol that works across the board for anyone, and that's what makes it really special.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it can also be used with animals. I use it on my own animals. I've helped other people with their animals to resolve a number of different issues going on. And it has a broad range. And interestingly enough, at one of the medical conferences I went to, I ended up sitting next to an anthroposophical vet. Ha. Who'd have thunk it?
Terrific. Well, you're also an animal communicator, so you have a whole other way of tuning into animals and figuring out what they need.
I did those studies also. Somewhere in there, I decided that I needed to begin to understand the health and well-being of animals and how to work with them. So I studied with an animal communicator in New York City for a number of years, went through a whole series of levels of training for that, learned different healing techniques, which I can now apply to humans as well. I mean, there's really very little that doesn't cross species. Healing is healing, no matter what. And I have had clients tell me when I've been working on their animals, doing a healing, and I've included them, they've called me back the next day to tell me that the effects on them were so extraordinary that their own doctors were dumbfounded when they went
right
to the doctor the next day. So it really is a question of energy, a question of vibration, not really a question, but just a flow, a universal flow of this remarkable energy that you can focus and send as needed. And that can kind of lead into the acutonic sound healing. It didn't take too long, but I would say within the past 7 years, I was very interested in sound healing. And I found this particular training where the tuning forks are custom calibrated to the frequencies of the planets, of the asteroids, of the goddesses. They're so connected to universal sounds. And how the sounds are defined are the frequencies that are brought back by the Hubble spacecraft or whatever scientific techniques that the scientists are using now to retrieve this information. The training allowed us to learn about the effects of each of those frequencies on the body, above the body, around the body, for any living thing, the smallest animal to the human being. You can even use them on plants. You can use them to clear environments. And they have very, very powerful effects because, unlike acupuncture, it can actually shift your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many implications to being able to use that. And I remember back in chemistry class, ancient history in high school, where we had these Chladni plates and they would put a powder on it and then they would take a tuning fork and they'd strike it. And you'd see all these amazing forms come up out of the powder. You'd see marching soldiers, you'd see waves, you'd see mountains, whatever it was. I think we were all dumbfounded by that. We couldn't really understand it. So vibration or sound creates form. In the beginning was the word.
Right.
And it can shift form. And so it can shift many different things. And it was quite an intense training. There are at least 7 different levels and many clinical levels after that. But to become an actual certified acutonics practitioner, you have to have gone through at least 3 levels of training. So that's one of my most favorite things to do, is to use the sound healing.
And you did a treatment on me, and it was completely wonderful. And I was fascinated with how you used 2 tuning forks, so you were creating harmonics. It was before my surgery, and you did a treatment on me, and it was pretty amazing work.
Most people either turn into scrambled eggs during the treatment, or they go to sleep. But it's very
I think
much
I did
the
both.
Experience. It's very much the experience of feeling like you're home in the sounds of the universe. And I don't think I've met anyone who doesn't love having a treatment in one way or the other. It's really pretty magical.
Yeah, it's amazing work. Let's give the call and phone number again for all those lurkers who are listening and not calling us. It's 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Give us a call. We'll have some fun. So are there other modalities? Well, there are two directions we can take in the next, however long we have here. One is, are there more modalities that you work in? Because obviously you have this incredible breadth of experience. And the other is just telling some stories about things that have happened along the path. Because a lot of what I want people to get from this is that it's not a linear path. There are challenges in it, and you have to listen to your inner guidance and the signs around you to see where you're supposed to go next, even if it doesn't make sense.
Well, it's hard to really say in the case of my life. There weren't many crises, but it was really a series of guided steps that led me to study all the different things that I did. And part of the studies that I've taken up, some have been on my own, have been pranic healing, working with crystals, working with essential oils, using spinal reflex points. At one point, I had actually begun a program in naturopathy, but that got interrupted when I went to nursing school. So I never really finished that, but that was huge. There were a lot of different areas to study from that. And after a while, you feel as if you're on cosmic overload, and you just have to step out of it. That's where my work, either in the corporate world or doing something else, really helped to keep me grounded and kept me having fun while I was trying to absorb all this other information.
You still there, Susan?
I'm here.
Okay, I was just turning my mic off because there's a phone ringing in the background. As you can probably hear. Stop already. Thank you. So it's fascinating to me that you actually were studying, I would call it naturopathy, you pronounced it differently, because I see some parallels with anthroposophical medicine and a lot of the other work that you've done, because it incorporates so many modalities. But you obviously already were going in that direction, and there's so much to learn from that approach.
There really is, and I'm glad that I interrupted that course to go to nursing school, because as we were studying herbology, there isn't enough information about the fact that herbs are drugs, and most of modern drugs come from plants that we know of. And I did have one experience where I was so sure that something that I had would heal one of my neighbors. And so I told her about this particular plant, and she went ahead and she bought a tea. And that poor woman was up all night peeing. I felt so badly. She didn't stop. I think it must have been 24 hours nonstop. And I had neglected to ask her whether or not she was a diabetic. And those two things did not go together. So those are one of those humiliating experiences that you really don't want to share with the world, but that everybody goes through.
Right. And it's not unlike what doctors go through. You know, if you miss one critical question that is going to interact with the treatment, or you don't ask about some other thing the person is doing that will interact with the treatment, then you get all kinds of strange effects. And if you still don't catch it and ask the question, it's really hard to figure out what's going on. But indeed, herbal remedies, especially when people go, well, if it's good for me, I'll take more. You know, which is also what people think about drugs, and it's not true of either. Most of the drugs are from plants, except what the pharmaceutical industry tends to do is say, what's the active ingredient, and pull that out of the plant and figure out a way to synthesize it so they can patent it. And then they isolate that and make that the drug. And the problem is that they're not incorporating all the other things from the plant which made that seemingly active ingredient work safely and effectively. You know, it's like sending out the quarterback without the team.
That's a very, very good point. And one of the things that anthroposophical medicine does, they have a test of crystallization. So they can look at your cells and they can see the life force. And that life force can be seen in the plants, in food, in almost anything. And that's what's often neglected when we deal with current pharmaceutical drugs, where only specific parts have been extracted and you don't have the whole. So a lot of the aspect of healing that could come from that substance is thrown out. And that's unfortunate, but on the other hand, it does have its benefits, and we know that there are many drugs out there that have saved many lives. And I think the human body, in spite of what we do to it, has incredible powers of healing, and that never ceases to amaze me. It's really very interesting. And I really enjoy now being in the corporate world, and if I hear someone, one of my coworkers, complaining about something going on, or if they've torqued their neck or they've hurt their back, I'll show them how to work the spinal reflex points in their feet to relieve it. And then you see them, you see a look of disbelief. Then they try to go around and tell everybody else what happened. And everyone else is rolling their eyes going, oh, yeah, yeah, sure, sure. And it's always fun to have those skills, no matter what it is. After a while, people began to know that you're not quite the same as everyone else, and they may ask you some interesting questions. So the worlds begin to intermingle after all.
Right. Well, my friend Frank, whom you've met, who also works in the corporate world as a IT professional, some of his coworkers know that if they have a headache, all they have to do is hang out with him for 5 minutes and it goes away. And I don't know what it is about you, but every time I have headache, it's, yeah, come on over here. So so much of the corporate world is about making people contract into a shape that fits in a cubicle, and that doesn't stick out and look different or sound different, that when they run across something that's literally outside the box, outside the cubicle, it's really amazingly enlightening for them after they get over the initial shock. But that's true in all of this work, especially if you can work remotely like both of us can. And not only are you saying to people, here's a different way of looking at what's causing the symptom, the problem that you're seeing, and not only can I fix it, you don't have to be here for me to do it. And that's a big jump for a lot of people, which is when, having referrals, having, stories from people who have had successful outcomes is really important. But it's a big jump for people because the belief is it's all physical, it's all scientific, and not looking at the energy, and everything is energy.
That's absolutely right. I had one friend who for years would listen to all of my stuff and say, yes, I believe that, but never did anything at all
right. In
terms of alternative healing. Then in one day, I think I got 3 emails, 2 or 3 phone calls. She was in pain and wanted to know what to do. So I brought her over, I did the scans, I did some acutonic sound healing, I did a number of other things. And after 2 treatments, she was sending emails out to everyone, I'm a believer, this is it forever.
Right. Well, that's, it's interesting because people use that term belief frequently incorrectly, because to me, belief is hearsay. It's secondhand information. Somebody tells you this is how it is, and you go, well, I trust you, or you've gotten it from a trusted source. So without having any personal experience, I'm going to accept this, and you just reinforce it and reinforce it. As soon as you have an experience, a personal experience, whether it confirms what you were told or it gives you a whole new perspective, you can't deny experience. It's not hearsay. It's firsthand information. And that's a real turning point for people. But until they have that, they're really going on hearsay about how the universe works, how healing works, all the rest of it. It's just what they believe is hearing it from someone else and saying, okay, yeah, I'll believe that. So that first experience is transformational for people.
Absolutely, it really is. But when it goes from belief to that inner knowing and that knowledge, then it's really unshakable. And you know how it can completely change a person. It can change their entire life. It's just a step at a time. Everything seems to work that way, just one step at a time. And it can make a total transformation in your life in a short amount of time.
Right. My best referrals are from people who are basically skeptical, who say, I don't know what he does and I don't understand it, but it works. You got to do this. Because, you can't argue with that one.
No, you really can't. And that, I think that's how most people do build their practice, by referrals, by other people talking to other people, even if they don't really understand it. Because they themselves stand in a level of integrity of knowing, then the other person will sense that and pick that up and trust. So it's right. Built on a certain level of trust that we can pass one to the other to the other.
Absolutely. So I want to wrap this up, but I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with you. And I know that you don't yet have a website, which is something I'm going to have to rectify for you. But why don't you give them your contact information so people can get in touch, find out more, and get some help from you?
My email address is allonespirit@gmail.com. And that's how people can reach me.
Fantastic. And you're located in the wilds of New Hampshire.
In Nashua, New Hampshire.
So, but obviously people don't have to be local necessarily to get treated by you, because there are some things you do remotely.
Absolutely. I've worked with people in Puerto Rico and Germany and the UK, so distance has nothing to do with it.
Right, right, which is same as my work. I work with people in Australia and all over the world, which is really very fun.
It really is, yeah.
So under what circumstances would people contact you? What kinds of things would you work on with people remotely or in other ways?
It could be a scan, a body scan of something that's going on for them, a healing, almost anything that is out of balance, they could contact me. I also work with diet and nutrition. I think that it's important, if you're going to be looking at a person and trying to figure out what's out of balance, to be able to supply the recommendations for bringing things into balance. So that's something that I've been doing for a long time. And as you know, I work with animals as well. I provide animal communication and healing and dietary recommendations and similar types of things.
Great. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show. First of all, it was great fun, but I've learned a lot about your background. And I'm sure everybody who's been listening is fascinated, because how could you not be fascinated? So I hope you get a lot of people getting in touch with you. I want to give people ways to get in touch with me. If you'd like to know more about my work, you can go to househealing.com. HouseHealing.com. And we were talking about testimonials. One of the things that I do on my website, because my work is unusual, obviously, is I have lots of audio testimonials, people telling what was going on, why they found me, and what the outcomes were. So you can get an idea what real people are experiencing with the work. If you go to the contact page, you can find my email address and voicemail phone number, and there's also a link to schedule a phone appointment with me. And I hope that everybody is getting a better sense of how this work in all its variations, because you know, I just do a specific kind. It's not all that different from Susan's, except in its form. How all this work fits together and how it might work in your life. Because of all the craziness and how tired I've been with recovering from the surgery, I don't have a confirmed guest for next week, which I apologize for, because that's not fair to the audience either. But that will be posted in the next couple of days. So please go to the empowerradio.com website and check the Farkas Files link, and we'll talk a little bit about who's going to be on next week. And I want to thank everybody that's been supporting me through my recuperation. I've gotten some wonderful letters and emails and other contacts from people, and I put up a website for people to get in touch with me while it was going on. It's been really wonderful. So at this point, I want to thank everybody for listening. And we will be back next week, again on Thursday, live. And this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Thanks so much for being on the show, Susan. Good night, everybody.
Thank you very much.